Welcome to the Devin Nunes Podcast. Breaking through the political noise, separating fact from fiction. From the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. Here is your host, Devin Nunes.
Welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast. It's my pleasure to have on one of the firebrand Republicans, so I'm expecting to have lots of fireworks here, with Matt Gaetz. Matt's been a great member of Congress. He's really been helpful on the Russia hoax, and I just want to cover a few things with Matt today, because he's been one of the guys on the front lines, willing to get dirt, willing to get in there and fight. And Matt, I can't thank you enough for all the work that you did through 2017 and 18, even though you weren't on the Intelligence Committee. You were one of those that weren't afraid to go out there and talk about this issue, to defend this fraud, stand up to this phony hoax that occurred to the President of the United States and really to the Republican Party. I think we can't forget that. And was really used as a fundraising tool against us in 2018. And I think it's one of the main reasons why we lost control of the House, is because the Department of Justice and the FBI really got involved in an election in 2018. And so, Matt, what I'm trying to do with a lot of these interviews is some of the historical figures like you that were involved in this, is I'm trying to take you back to the time, when did you first realize this was a hoax? You're watching, you know, kind of what's going on in the basement of the Capitol, the House Intelligence Committee, and I can remember going out and talking to you on the floor, because a lot of times I couldn't tell you everything that I knew. But what was that point, Matt? Welcome to the show, first of all. What was that point that you realized this is a hoax and you got to stand up and start telling the American people about it?
Well, as you remember, Devin, the Democrats didn't even wait for Donald Trump to be sworn in. You know, we had folks like Maxine Waters so convinced that Russia had dictated the outcome of this election that she was literally on the floor trying to stop the Electoral College from certifying the election of Donald Trump. I was new and I'm a bit eager and anxious at times. And so I kept wondering, when was our team going to start fighting back? When were we going to stop sort of the bunker mentality of if we just hold on tight enough and demonstrate sufficient fortitude that this will all kind of wash past us? I had not met you yet in person when I saw you at the White House in now somewhat of a famous trip you made, because you had obtained the information that
The famous midnight run story,
right?
That, by the way, was a fake news story. There was no such thing as a midnight run, but I always got to bring that up.
Well, I remember when you were giving interviews about this, you seemed to be the only clarion voice reflecting a need to be proactive. What we heard from Paul Ryan was we just needed to bear hug Robert Mueller, hope that the president hadn't done anything illegal. But you were doing something far different. And so I went to Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows and Ron DeSantis, few of the folks who I'd looked up to at that time, and said, you know, when are we going to go and kind of have Devin's back and make the case, not that the president is simply not guilty, but that the underpinnings of this entire endeavor were corrupt. And that really, you know, when you go back to those early 2017 days, there were two groups of Republicans, those who said, well, you know, let's just sort of wait for this to pass, and those who really wanted to tell the truth to the American people. That's our obligation to our constituents, is to tell the truth. And so I remember on fly-in nights, a lot of folks don't know this, but Monday nights, Congress comes back in and takes our votes. And I mean, every Monday night when we would come back for that vote series, it would seem you and myself and Jim Jordan and some of the other fighters would get together and really reflect on the events that were likely to come in the week, how we wanted to talk about those events. And that was my introduction to the issue. I managed to get myself on television a good amount to make the case. And that's why I had a significant role.
Matt, was there anything like, you know, from my perspective and the Republicans that were on the Intelligence Committee, the reason we knew this was likely a hoax from the very beginning, we weren't for sure, but we had pretty good inclination of it, was because in 2016 and 2015 and 14, we had been very critical of Obama's positions that he was taking against Vladimir Putin. In fact, he was kind of their best friend. And in fact, the Obama administration didn't even spend the money that we were giving him. That's how ridiculous it was. So when all of a sudden after the election, they're claiming, we get a briefing that said, oh, you know, the Russians did what they normally do. And then like 2 or 3 weeks later, the story changes and they're going to do a whole new community assessment. And this is late 2016. we all of a sudden started to sit there and go, what on earth is going on? And then, of course, it ultimately turns into the Mueller investigation a few months later. But what was there a specific time or instance, or was it just, was there anything that you remember that you were like, whoa, wait a second, there's no, Trump can't be colluding with Russians here. What is this about?
Well, I knew from the beginning that the claims that there was a conspiracy with Russia were false because I was very actively involved in the president's campaign. Florida is a swing state. I spoke at, I don't know, about four rallies for the president. And I guess we can be honest now about the 2016 campaign. It was less a well-oiled machine and more a traveling carnival with a highly charismatic and transformational sort of circus ringmaster in Donald Trump. And so I knew that they were barely able to organize rally to rally to rally. It was sort of magic how it all came together, and that it was impossible for this group of people to be like taking their orders from Russia. Now, it took me longer than it took you, of course, to understand the difference between not guilty and corrupt origins. And I think when we really saw the linkage to the Obama administration, we pulled back the layers of the onion. A lot of people today that observe what was going on think that the Russia hoax began when Donald Trump was sworn in. The reality, as you point out, is that the Democrats are always accusing us of their failures and of the things they're doing. And the Obama administration, remember when they sold us on the Russia reset? They were going to reset everything with Russia. And then, of course, President Obama famously said, well, give me more flexibility, after the election, sort of kowtowing to Russia's demands. So the Obama foreign policy legacy had imploded on itself in no small part due to their failures with Russia. And so they needed a scapegoat. And that scapegoat turned out to be Donald Trump. And when you started to see the linkage between their failures and the allegations made, it just became very clear that the Russia hoax did not begin with the Trump administration. It really began in the Obama administration. And then James Comey was the inside man. He was the guy that went from Obama to Trump to help execute the coup.
And then the irony of it all is that the Democrats were doing exactly what they were accusing Trump of doing. They were the ones that were knowingly colluding with Russians, and the FBI even knew they were colluding with Russians. And the fact that they would open up a counterintelligence investigation on the Trump campaign when they knew that supposedly this was Russian information that was coming through an intermediary, through Christopher Steele, a former British spy, the irony there is just absolutely incredible that they've been able to get away with this for that long. Well, so take us through. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, there was a strategic decision that our team made that I don't know all of America knows about. You and Mark Meadows and your team on intelligence, on the intelligence committee, took all these classified briefings and you had all this information. Jim Jordan and I purposefully did not take classified briefings because we wanted to be able to go and talk with great freedom about our perceptions of events as they were unfolding without the accusation that we were going beyond that. And I just can't imagine for you. So all along the way, you always knew so much more than we did. And it must have been deeply frustrating to you to know all these things that you couldn't talk about. We could at least talk about all that we knew about.
Well, the best thing was when we did the Nunes memo, we were able to get out then that, hey, they had used the dirty dossier, the Fusion GPS dirt that came from a former British spy who was supposedly getting it from Russians, which I actually just think he made most of it up. I'm not sure it really came from any Russians at all, but at least, that's what he claimed, so we can take him at his word. And then you have this, when you fast forward and you move forward after that happens, I was able to make that public, and then they had planted these stories and they used those stories to get the FISA report. But I always said what's actually else that's behind there that's still blacked out is even worse. And that was what now people know because of the declassifications that were done by the Horowitz report and Rick Grenell, is that they were running spies in already into the campaign. They didn't need a FISA warrant. They were already spying on Trump, on the Trump campaign. And then they left that exculpatory evidence out. So let me fast forward, Matt, to let's go into 2018. That the memo comes out, the Orr and Nellie Orr and Bruce Orr, all that information comes out. The Fusion GPS employee and one of the top people, the Justice Department, that was funneling information in. Take us back to kind of the Meadows, Jordan, what you're looking at as you're watching us and how you're messaging at that time.
It was so important to us to invite America into this important set of facts that were admittedly very complicated. You know, there were times I spoke to people who aren't political who said, you know, gosh, all these different characters and events, how do we pull them together? So each and every night, our team had to find a way to take the elements of the Nunes memo, the great information that organizations like Judicial Watch were able to get out through FOIA requests, and to be able to frame that up in a story that this wasn't this wasn't a crime, it was a setup. And I think that being able to do that every night really kept public opinion on our side throughout the entire Russia hoax. There was never a moment where the public supported an impeachment based on this crazy Russia story, and I think that's because we didn't let up.
So going back, so staying in 2018, so before the elections, though, when you guys are doing all the interviews and those text messages come out, talk about, so those are the text messages between the lovebirds and all of that, and then Meadows is really leading that effort to go through the text messages. He did a great job on that. Walk us through that. What were you guys, how did you go about that investigation and going, getting into those text messages? Because of course, you know, you guys were able to get those. What we had were classified, so we couldn't talk about it.
For us, I mean, the big text message, everybody knows about it, was the insurance policy text message. You know, out of all that we saw, when you literally saw members of our government talking about an insurance policy against the president, I mean, I remember where I was when we got that information in my congressional office. I remember my jaw hitting the floor. And it also reinforced what a lot of people believed, and that is that there's a group of people in permanent Washington that serve in these agencies of government and that really think that they're the ones, no matter who's elected, that ought to run the country. And a lot of times they do. A lot, no matter who the Republican or Democrat is that's president, no matter who's leading the Congress, we do too much to devolve our authority to these professional bureaucrats. Well, Donald Trump was something different. It was very clear, whether you agreed with him or disagreed with him, he was going to impose his will on this government, and that's why he was elected. And so when you saw the resentment, things like, you know, oh, the angry Trump voters, the Walmart shoppers, Hillary should win 100 million to zero. Mm-hmm. I think the reason that resonated so much with everyone all throughout America is because all their lives they've felt like people in Washington talk down to them and don't trust them to make the decisions that guide the country. And I think that's why those messages were so much bigger than even the words on the page.
So Matt, you've been one of the ones who you've been willing to go, because I should just say this, and I talk about this on my podcast all the time. You know, I just don't talk to the Democrat-controlled media anymore. And I'm hoping you'll stop too. But during that time period, you're going to the CNNs, you're talking to all the reporters, you're going on MSNBC, you'll go, as I think I've heard you say, you'll go to and play away games. You'll go and you'll go on these shows. Now, I'm assuming you went to the green rooms of these places. I've never been, I think I've been to the CNN green room, but I don't think I've been to the MSNBC green room before. Walk our viewers and listeners, what's it like when, you know, let's just, you know, in 17, 18, and 19...
People. Well, first of all, just on the green rooms, before you get to the dynamic, there is an inverse relationship between how well people treat you on air and off air, in my experience. The MSNBC green room has every chocolate, every fudge. You go to CNN, they've got the artisan coffees that you can make. And like, you know, I think there are like refugee camps on the border that have more food than the Fox News green room. So you don't always get the best treatment there. But when it comes to the on-air engagement, I do think it's important for people who are in the airport, who are passing by one of these biased non-news, fake news channels, for them to hear the truth every once in a while. And I know they're unfair, and I know they package things to present them later out of context, but I truly believe it's important for some of us to go play away games. But Devin, I'm coming more and more to your side because I'm having a very hard time getting booked on MSNBC and CNN these days. It appears as though they've had quite enough of the truth.
So, but a lot, I get this a lot of times, and I don't really know anymore because I don't interact with them. That's why I'm asking you, because I'm curious. Like, they're nice to you, right, in the green room. And then, like, they'll go out there and they'll kind of attack you, or maybe you're on with a Democrat, because I know you've done that a lot too, where you're doing the both sides and having a debate. Then are they mean to you and they turn around, they're nice to you, or then they don't talk to you after that? Like, what happens? Take us into that behind the scenes there.
Yeah, it really varies. You know, there are very warm, engaging people. Like, for example, Donna Brazile is one of the funniest people in the green room and is always sort of yucking it up with people, even though that we have very different views on things. But then there are people like Bill Kristol, who just sort of, you know, grimace at you and kind of snarl. And I can't imagine going through life that unhappy. You know, though you and I have been fighting together in these very tough fights that go really to the type of democracy we want our children and grandchildren to inherit, but we're always able to be pleasant and kind to others. I think that when the Trump haters got really exposed for overhyping these claims, it affected them to their core. But one person I have to say I've never had a one-on-one conversation with is your good friend Adam Schiff. I have not had that privilege, so I would have to ask you what it's like to interact with the person with the least amount of integrity in the entire United States Congress.
Well, that's a perfect transition, because I want to move to that. So I want to kind of get off the Russia hoax and move into the impeachment hoax, which was kind of act two.
The Ukraine sequel to the Russia hoax.
Yeah. What did you call it one time? You had a really funny line. It was like the cheap knockoff sequel.
Like the cheap Ukrainian knockoff to the Russia hoax.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to bring the listeners and viewers to that point. And it's probably one of the funniest. It's like you had to be there to really understand this. But in the middle of the impeachment hoax, people may remember there's the dungeon, and everybody goes into the dungeon, and you know, everybody's mad. And then there's people holding press conferences. And then one day, lo and behold, people storm the dungeon, storm the skiff. And you're in there, and a bunch of other people are in there, and you guys, you know, come in there without permission. And I'll just never forget. I didn't really know what was going on. All of a sudden, I see people. I wasn't sure what they were doing there. And then I see you right behind Adam Schiff, and you look like you're just sitting there. And it was like the most bizarre time that it seemed like time just like stopped. And nothing moved. Everybody just sat around looking at each other for what seemed like 5 or 10 minutes at least. Nobody talked. Everybody just sat there. And you remember this. So what happened? Like, how did you get there? Like, you walk in, you sit down. Did anybody talk to you?
No, I honestly, when I first went to the skiff, I thought, well, why would anyone object if they're trying to remove the duly elected president? And I serve on the Judiciary Committee that has impeachment jurisdiction. I couldn't imagine people would object, but of course, that's what occurred. But let's give Adam Schiff his due in this respect. He was able to conceal material facts for an extended period of time down in that dungeon, because here's kind of how they would work. They would go find a Trump-hating witness. They would carefully curate and draft a very misleading opening statement. And then they'd have the witness in at about 9 or 10. And then by 11 o'clock or noon, somehow the opening statement of the witness would leak to the media. And then the Democrats would ask all their questions. And then by the time, you know, you or Elise Stefanik or Chris Stewart made a great point exposing the flaws in cross-examination, well, by then it was 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and the Democrats had baked in their lies. So I wanted America to observe all this in real time, both their direct examination and your cross-examination. And I just thought if we just kept waiting around, they were chipping away at the presidency unfairly. And so that's why about 50 of us went in there and said, you know, this is over. This notion of the private interviews and the selective leaks. And you'll note, Devin, that very soon after we stormed the skiff, they were out of the bunker because public opinion was on our side that a flawed process was not a replacement for American democracy.
No, that's exactly right. You are right. They couldn't withstand the pressure at that point of continuing to do those secret meetings in the bunker. And look, and I'm all for keeping issues that are classified in nature classified, sure. But we're not talking about our nation's secrets here. We're talking about a bunch of people who hate the president, many of them who didn't even have access to any classified information. So the fact that that was being done at the House Intelligence Committee, it's why I always say that, you know, after Adam Schiff became chairman, he really didn't become chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, because he really changed it and created the House Impeachment Committee. And that's what we're still working on today. So just to finish up on this, Matt, on that topic, though, I want to, so you come in that skiff. Give us kind of the play-by-play. Does anybody try to stop you? Like, how do you end up, like, you're like right here behind Adam Schiff. You're like, You're like 3 feet behind him. Like, how did you pick that seat? Like, how'd you get up there?
Well, it was open. You know, at first I walked in the room and sat down, and I think there was such confusion. No one really knew any better than to stop me. And so I walked in, and it turns out no one particularly wanted to sit behind Adam Schiff. And so I, you know, quietly took a seat, and I appreciate you reflecting on this, not as me trying to stop the hearing or disrupt the hearing or talk to the witness or interrupt the affairs of your work, but simply to see what was going on so that the 700,000 people I represent could be vindicated in their representation in the United States Congress. And so, you know, that was significant to me. I was quite taken. You'll recall the Democrats on intelligence are a very visceral bunch. And, you know, we all are aware of the Intelligence Committee and its long history of bipartisanship, putting the nation first. I'm on armed services, and we try to take a very similar approach to our obligations to our country. And there was no obligation to country from the Democrats in this. It was a partisan endeavor. And they were, you know, folks like Eric Swalwell and Val Demings, they were very biting and vicious to us for simply having the audacity to want to know what the hell was going on.
Right. And those should have been public hearings. If you're going to impeach the president, they should have been public hearings. So the audience knows, you know, you guys come in there before everything starts. And then, so the committee, so you didn't interrupt anything. You were actually there ahead of time, sitting down. And then because I just remember kind of coming in there and then looking, I'm like, oh, wait. And I was like, isn't that Gates? Wait. Then I had to think a second. Oh, wait, I don't think he's cleared to be in here. And I just sat there, and then Schiff's there. Did like he turn and like tell you to get out, or did he say, or he just nothing, or just no interaction?
He told me to upset myself. I declined to do that. And then there was a series of calls with the House parliamentarian, and everyone sort of got lawyered up. But, you know, I just think that at the end of the day, the American people in this moment of time wanted to see bold leadership. You know, I mean, when you were the first American to stand out in front of the country and say, this was a setup, this was a spying and intelligence gathering operation against the president and his campaign, people really gravitated to you because it was the truth. And I think that it is a lesson for our politics in the future, that when we just sort of hope that these things go away, when we think, well, no one will really believe any of this stuff, we can allow a lying media and a vicious Democratic Party to squeeze us out of the conversation, and more importantly, to squeeze the truth out. And so I think that work we did, it provided a clarion moment for the nation to see what was really going on.
Well, I have to tell you, it was one of the most bizarre and funniest times I've ever, you know, because it was, of course, ticks you off what's happening in there. But to see you guys walk in and then sit down, and then just that, you know, it felt like that song, you know, was it Time Is in a Bottle, like does time stand still? And like we just sat there, what seemed like for, I swear it must have been 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, and nobody said anything. Everybody's just sitting there silent.
It is amazing how Washington can be stunned by just a little bit of bold action. And I, you know, and you mentioned this earlier about the Intelligence Committee converting. And what's hard for, I think, a lot of the country to understand, Devin, is the work that didn't get done because you guys were so distracted. And it's work you can't talk about. But the Intelligence Committee has to look at every corner of this globe and ensure that our country is protected, our people are protected, and I hope that in the future, Americans don't have to pay with their blood for this terrible distraction that Adam Schiff visited on our country. But I can imagine you could, in your wildest nightmares, probably see circumstances where the lack of the Intelligence Committee doing its actual job would undermine our country as much as this horrible impeachment did.
Well, absolutely, Matt, and you know this. We've got some of the best and brightest Republicans are on the Intelligence Committee that are serious about national security. And a lot of them have a lot of great experience, and a lot of us have been doing this for a long time. And so and we know what we're doing is important work because of being on the impeachment committee now. But yeah, it's very, very frustrating because there's so many important programs that we spend tens of billions of dollars on a year that the taxpayers expect us to be overseeing and expect us to ensure that the deep state bureaucrats, whether you believe in it or not, if they're making the decisions on behalf of the American public or not. So it's not a Republican or Democrat thing. It's really those programs are all black programs. You know, they are all top secret programs. Nobody knows about these programs. If we're not watching over them, no one is.
Wow.
And that ought to scare the hell out of people. And it's very, we have continued the Republicans. We still have broken it down regionally so that every member has a region, everybody, but the members are having to do it on our own because the Democrats spend all day, every day impeaching.
Will they stop? Will they give up? Or is this the new normal? If the president's reelected, can we expect, you know, that they will just throw a dart at a country in the globe and then accuse the president of some wrongdoing with that country?
Well, I don't think they'll stop. I don't think they'll stop. I think that's why it's clear. And that's why I want to get into this, you know, just to kind of end the show here about the next election, about what's going to happen in the fall, because, you know, we have a shot. Republicans have a shot to win back the majority. And I tell everybody, if everybody just does a little bit, we have a real chance to win. I had on I did a podcast for one of our great candidates in Virginia named Nick Freitas. And one of the things I'm trying to do is highlight a lot of the candidates in the seats that we can actually win back. And so Matt, we can win some seats back in Florida. I know you probably know David Valadao. He's my neighbor here. He's running. He needs people's help. He lost like a month after the election because of vote harvesting. But it'd be great if, can you walk us through maybe the top two or three candidates that we have in Florida of seats that we can get back? And I think there's even one just to the north in Georgia, just north of your district also, that we can get back, right?
Yeah, I think that Karen Handel can be elected back to the Congress. She lost to Lucy McBath. That's an area that the Congressman Rice used to represent previously, and we can win that back. But there's a really exciting candidate I want to highlight in the state of Florida. Anna Paulina Luna is running to defeat Charlie Crist. In the state of Florida, she is a military spouse. She is a former active duty military. Understands, I think, she is a Hispanic by background and just a very dynamic candidate. And I think that as Republicans, we really do need to expand the map and go into places where even people who might normally lean Democrat are just so tired of the destructive tactics that we see from their party. And in Florida, the rising voters are no party affiliation. And so you've got to go and win those voters. But yeah, if people would check out Anna Paulina Luna, I think you're right. If great patriots all over America find maybe one or two seats to send a donation, to make a few phone calls, to share some social media posts and get the message out, I think that we can get the job done.
Well, Matt, thanks so much for being on. Matt Gaetz from the Panhandle of Florida. Matt, you've been very kind to give us your time and your perspective on your involvement in the Russia hoax and the impeachment hoax. And you've been one of those fighters, and it's been great to have somebody like you in the trenches, because I know you're one of those guys. There were times I'd look behind me and I'd have very few people there that were defending me, and you were one of them. So I really thank you for that.
Well, you're a patriot, Devin, as I've said publicly and privately. And one moment I'll never forget as long as I live is being with you at Camp David and the president coming to have dinner with us and giving this like 10-minute oration about your patriotism and bravery and courage and what you and your family have endured to tell the truth to the country. It was a very stirring oration from the president and well-deserved. I'm proud to fight with you, Devin.
Well, thank you. Thanks a lot, Matt. I appreciate it. Oh, and you have your own podcast. We forgot
to plug
that.
That's right. That's right. Hot Takes with Matt Gaetz.
Hot Takes with Matt. And is it once a week, twice a week? When do you do it?
Every weekday. Folks can subscribe and get about a 20-minute take on the news each and every weekday.
You're doing every day?
Damn right. You should subscribe, Devin.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. That's crazy. Well, but you have real talent, man. You're a real podcaster.
So. Well, thanks for having me on your podcast. You have, I think, you and Crenshaw have like the top two congressional podcasts. So maybe I'll be able to join the ranks of the elite one day.
I'm sure you'll pass us up, man. This is Devin Nunes. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Devin Nunes podcast. We invite you to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And remember, you can download this podcast on iTunes or at devinnunes.com.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling.
trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard working family can fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith. We're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we've kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.